Coming to you from out of the blue, live from the heart of Bolito today, and picking up with episode 4, can you believe it, in this really interesting, organic, free-rolling podcast series, Renewed Thinking, which I've got to say has been a highlight of my month, getting to sit alongside my special guest, Victor Snyders, CEO of Skin Renewal, and in conversation on the most interesting topics in the world of business, in the world of brand building, in the world of consumer insights and market trends. And Victor, we've got cameras rolling, we've got the microphone set up, and I'm looking forward to diving into another really inspired episode of this what is becoming now quite a firm favorite amongst the local podcast set. How are you today?
Excellent, thanks Mike. It's great to be back in Bolito, even if we don't have the sun shining today.
You know, what can I say? Bolito's looking a bit like Cape Town today, but hey, we've got warm people, warm personalities, and we've got hot topics to lift the lid on today. We've already had some really interesting conversations around building a business, solid foundations, building a brand. We've looked at health, wellness, and beauty trends. I mean, this is very much up your alley, Skin Renewal being a leader in medical aesthetics, not just in South Africa, but I believe you are now quite in demand internationally on the speaking circuit. Am I right?
Well, it's I wouldn't exactly say that it's being in demand, but you know, we have particular views, and I think one of the things that we have done is embrace change. And this is an industry, as many industries are today, which are facing very, very rapid change. And as a result, we're at the forefront of those changes. We are known as innovators, and people who are not early adopters like us, because as an early adopter, you get the benefit of early adoption, but you also get the pains of having to understand what it is that you've adopted.
Yeah, working out the kinks.
So very often there are people who choose not to be early adopters, and then they watch the early adopters and try and get their opinions. And specifically in our industry, at least we're able to talk to things that are specific to the industry. So people within our industry do tend to listen to our perspective, simply because it comes a little bit more from the future than from the past.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I really enjoy these conversations that that we're having, is there comes with it this really dialed in sense of you've got your finger on the pulse of where things are heading. And since you just brought up this idea of being an early adopter, I think it's a good angle for us to look at technological innovation, and this idea of the technological advantage. If you can embrace technology and innovation and use it to your advantage, maybe ahead of your competition, can it be a deciding factor in whether you're going to be able to weather the storms that might lie ahead in your business's path? Well, let's have a look at it, because as you were kind of hinting at, you're in a technology business. I mean, you literally bring in some really world-class, game-changing, cutting-edge technology, lasers and big machines and things that really need to be operated by people who know what they're doing. But how rapidly has technology been creating ripples in your sector?
Well, I think even before we go into the sector is possibly to look back at my own history with tech. And as you know, I'm an architect by profession, and I grew up with a drawing board and a pencil.
Very analog.
Very, very analog. In fact, we were not allowed to use stencils or anything. We had to learn to write by hand. We weren't allowed to use technical drawing aids. So everything was done by hand when I was at university in the 70s and very early 80s.
Wow.
And I came out of this very analog space where computer-aided drafting was in its very, very infancy, around about 1980, 1981. Mm. And there was the potential for draftsmen to move away from drawing boards and learn to use computers instead to do design work.
Scary thought at the time.
Very, very scary at the time. But I moved out of the field of architecture into commercial property in the early 80s after my national service stint, 2 years in the army. And I remember so clearly, we were at the stage running 31 shopping centres through South Africa. I had about 1,000 tenants. And on a monthly, everything was manual. So every single rent payment was put into ledgers, and then we would cross-cast the ledgers, and we would build reports literally by hand and using one of those old calculators, adding up rows and columns to see that everything cross-cast and matched, and we would create these monthly reports. And there was one guy at the company who had an Apple computer. Wow. Apple computer in those days was about 5 inches across, and it was a black screen with green letters on the screen. That's all that it was. And I was fascinated by this guy and his Apple computer, and he was doing some very basic. Before Excel, there was Lotus 1-2-3, and before Lotus 1-2-3, there was something called SuperCalc.
Wow.
And he had the SuperCalc thing, which could calculate things and feasibility studies. And I was fascinated by it, but I could never get near this machine because he was the only guy who was allowed to operate this machine. But I used to go and sit in his office and just watch him.
Watch him doing SuperCalc.
I switched jobs, and the company that I moved to had one computer. Okay, that computer did not have a hard drive. It was all run on floppy disks. And there was a computer, there was a monitor, and there were keyboards. And I looked at it, and I was 27 years old at the time. And I thought, I'm in trouble. Because if I don't learn to use that piece of kit that's there, by the time I'm 30, I may be actually superfluous to things are going on. Because there are young guys going to be coming through who know exactly how that works. And if I don't know how it works, I'm going to get left behind.
So the writing was on the wall.
And I thought I would land up on the ash heap of business. So what I did is I would stay at the office late, and at 6:30, when everyone had gone, I would unplug the computer, unplug the monitor, unplug the keyboard, take it all to my car, take it home, carry it inside, set it all up on the dining room table, and work most of the night, and then leave for the office at 6 in the morning and put everything back where it was found because it wasn't my computer. And that was really where what has become almost an obsession with tech. But it was more about the fear of being left behind. And I realized that I would have to stay at that cutting edge because as fast as I learned to use that computer, so the computers were getting faster, bigger, smaller, more powerful, and I had to keep in touch with it. So, and it's a roller coaster. Once you get on that tech roller coaster, you have to stay abreast of the latest because that's the way the thing moves. So as a result, I've always been into computers. I was a very early adopter on the internet. I used to go onto the internet through a system called Belltel, using an X25 pad and connecting up to international bulletin boards, which got me onto the very early days of the internet, where it was just a numerical interface, where when we had to search for something, we used a tool called Archie.
Wow.
When we had to write something, we used a word processor called VI, V-I.
So,
and this was early days. This was probably 8 or 9 years before Google existed.
Wow.
So I'd always stayed on the tech side of things. And within the construction industry and the property industry, we tried to stay up to speed with what was happening with tech. But tech was really there as a tool to assist us in the management of our businesses. When we started Skin Renewal in 2004-2005, we decided that one of the things we needed to do was not only work with the treatments that doctors were doing by way of injecting, but actually start looking at lasers and the technology side, which was in its infancy in that stage. And so now we actually were starting to develop tools that were used in the treatment of patients.
Wow.
And the rate at which that tech has developed over the 20-odd years that I've been in the industry is really very similar to the speed at which cell phone technology has evolved. There are machines that you buy that within 3 years become a doorstop.
Really?
Because they are simply superfluous.
Wow.
So, and that becomes very expensive when you have to start renewing a 1 million rand laser or a 1.5 million rand laser every 3 years when you've hardly had time to pay it off or amortize it.
Yeah.
So the need to understand the tech and the direction that the tech is working off and the platforms that can evolve, but yet allow you to not have to totally reinvest, but rather have an upgrade path to them, was very important to identify early on, which thankfully it's something that we got right. And today, there is an enormous amount of technology that is used in treating our patients.
Well, this is something that I wanted to touch on, because we are undoubtedly living in the age of AI, of artificial intelligence. And from having the machinery, the precision laser technology that actually does the treating, to having now this string in your bow that you can tap into to help with the diagnostic side of things and maybe data management. And I'm fascinated to find out how you see the age of AI filtering into your business, and possibly where the larger trends are in the advantages that this thing can bring to the table, because there ain't no escaping it. The genie's out the bottle right now.
Absolutely. So the first thing we do is we separate tech into two distinct areas in our business. There's the tech which is used to treat patients. That is in medical grade equipment, where it's actually used, a thing like a laser or radio frequency device, things like that, where there's that tech. For me, the more interesting side is actually the business tech, is the stuff that we use to run the business, which in turn treats patients. And there we have seen an enormous evolution. When our business started, you used a cardboard or a paper file and cards, and you had things like a Rolodex. I'm sure you remember a Rolodex with thousands of cards of people's names and addresses, and you managed everything on paper. The doctor wrote down on pieces of paper, which then got filed, and the patient's history and all the notes that were taken went on paper and were filed, and then you've got thousands of patients. And then one of those files gets misfiled, and then you can't find the patient's file because it was filed under their surname or under their first name instead of their surname, and there are spelling mistakes. And we just started developing a huge mountain of paper where we were having to rent space in the facilities that we have just simply to accommodate the files and the history of patients.
Wow.
You're talking about a couple of 100,000 patients that we had to have all this information. And by law, you have to keep their information ad infinitum.
Yeah.
And it was just building up masses and masses of paper. So we had to go to computerized systems to start doing things. The appointments were made in a diary and on paper and written down. And if you moved an appointment, you used an eraser and you wrote it somewhere else, and it was kept in a paper diary.
And look, things worked. I mean, stuff got done. But
but there were a lot of mistakes. And we realized, certainly as part of our decision to scale our business, that doing everything manually was just, it wasn't going to last. So we had to develop systems. And we were one of the first people to start scaling. As it is, our practice management software has already gone through 4 totally different types of software within the 20 years.
Really?
Because each time our business and the nature of our business has outgrown the software that existed.
Wow.
So we've had to upgrade that and change it and change vendors. We now operate out of a system that comes out of the USA, which has been specially adapted for the use that we have for it. But it's something that constantly shifts. We've seen tech required in so many other areas of our business, because it's all very well you have something that manages your practice. In other words, appointments with patients, clients, and their medical histories. But you also have to have financial software that is managing the financial side of your business.
Oh, yeah.
You also have to have data management software. You also have to have customer relationship management software. And all of these softwares are developed independent of each other, and they don't talk to each other. So you land up with 3-4 different systems that you're desperately trying to get communicating with each other.
Yeah.
It's like putting 4 people in a room who all speak a different language without an interpreter, and then expecting them to have a conversation.
That's going to be the one to crack, to find that holistic integration solution to create a harmonious ecosystem. I mean, obviously, there are people working on it, and I think that's why, I mean, taking it back to that first computer that you saw, Apple. I mean, Steve Jobs and his visionary team worked to create this seamless ecosystem where if you bought into it and if you got all of the different facets, the touch points of the Apple ecosystem, it all worked like you'd never want to pick up another piece of tech. You'd stay within this bubble of Apple because it all, from the hardware to the software to the operating system to the interface, it all created this seamless flow. I don't know if any other major company has just rolled it out or scaled it up to that extent. I know Elon Musk is working on creating his so-called everything app. That guy's got so many things going on. Who knows?
What's been so interesting in watching the development of software specifically is that what happens is first it is determined that there is a need for a piece of software to do a specific task.
Mm.
And then the development of that software starts. However, the industry that it's meant for is not sitting still or standing still. It is evolving as well. So by the time that it has been developed and tested and run through beta and rolled out and commercialized, the industry that it was meant for has moved on. So you are in a constant situation of chasing your own tail.
Yeah.
Because as fast as you develop, if your industry is evolving as well, you have to keep redeveloping yourself. And the other thing is regulations come in. So for instance, there is a degree of confidentiality that exists between doctor and patient. Now, when it was a paper file and that paper file was locked in the storeroom at night, then the patient's information was confidential. But once it was on a computer, locally stored, and then centrally stored, and then on the cloud, suddenly questions of confidentiality came in. So whilst we deal with things like the Poppy Act or in the US, it's called the HIPAA compliance, where it's personal privacy. In medical, this is far greater.
Yeah.
It's not just your telephone number and your email. It's your medical history that has to remain confidential. So all sorts of technologies have had to be developed to comply with that sort of level of privacy that patients require. And as you're working across multiple channels, if we just, for instance, look at if a patient wants to contact us, and this doesn't just apply to our business, it applies to any business. I could go and visit that business and walk in and talk to a receptionist. I could phone them.
Yeah.
I can send them an email. I can send them a message via Messenger or via Instagram. I can send them a WhatsApp.
That's a lot of different.
I can talk to a live chat platform. And all of these are different incoming streams. Now, if you as a business only function one way and you are insisting that everybody communicates with you via email or comes to your store, then you are limiting the number of people that can get hold of you. So you need to, and as we know, the customer is always right. So how the customer wants to communicate us, if we want that customer, we need to accommodate the way they want to talk to us and not force them to communicate in the way that we want them to talk to us.
Wow.
So that customer centricity is very, very important. But what that means is that you no longer have a single incoming channel or multi-channel. You actually move to an omni-channel.
And is that your current model? I mean, you have to be.
So it's been a huge challenge because if you consider, and it's one thing if you have a single location, but we have 20 locations. And if each one of those incoming streams of communication from customers or potential customers is coming into 20 different locations, and a patient chooses to go to multiple locations, how do we know what level of communication has taken place from one clinic to another, unless it is all stored in one place? Mm. Because today they may have sent a WhatsApp because they were calling from a coffee shop. But when they get back to the office, they may phone you. And then when they're at the computer, they may email you. Now, to the patient, that is one conversation. If we store that as three separate conversations and then try to stitch them together, we're going to miss something. And we're going to miss vital information somewhere along the line and disrupt that patient journey. So you have to have a single view of the customer.
And do you currently have a solution, a way to kind of stitch those things together?
It's been one of our biggest challenges because much software is built to be a closed environment.
Mm.
So like in the early days of Apple, everything was built by Apple to talk to Apple systems. And if you had a Samsung phone, you weren't in the Apple ecosystem.
Sorry for you.
And the Samsung phone didn't talk to the Apple phone, and Android didn't exist. Android was a far more open system.
Yeah.
But Apple was a very closed environment. And the Apple iStore was a great example of that, where everything was rooted through that because they kept it as a closed system. Now, many software developers have got closed systems. So now you need to develop ways of pieces of software talking to each other. That's where a concept called the API, the programming interface came in, which enables computers or systems to talk to each other. But not every system wants other people talking to their system because they want to keep it within their own ecosystem and develop their own technology. So for us, this has been a very big challenge over the course of the last 3-4 years. We're now getting very, very close to getting all of our different tech things to actually communicate with each other.
Really?
And sometimes it's by way of negotiation with the software vendors and striking agreements with them. Let's just take a simple thing like a payment.
Yeah.
A payment comes in, a patient comes in and pays via a credit card. If that credit card system is not tied to your practice management system, your invoicing system, then that sale is not automatically recorded. Now you would need to re-enter the payment details manually into your system to reflect the credit card.
Okay.
Now it's in your practice management system, but it's not in your financial software. So now you need to export it from there into the financial software. Then you get a bank statement. So now we have to do reconciliation. So we have to reconcile monies coming in via credit card, via cash, via EFTs, with the bank statement, with the practice management software, with your financial software, and make sure that all the money is exactly where it is supposed to be and nothing is missing.
I've just gotten a headache right now. I don't
So this used to take one person working full-time the entire month, reconciling each transaction across four systems to make sure everything balanced. We now do it with AI, and it takes 8 minutes.
Is that seriously the reduction in time?
So we've now developed an AI system that takes those four things, matches everything up, and throws out a single exception report that says, these are the five transactions you did this month amongst 10,000 where things don't match.
And is that a custom solution that you've had to get kind of tailor-made?
With software developers and people who run AI systems. So it's an area where we've brought AI into the reconciliation side of our financial reporting systems to make sure that everything is where it's supposed to be.
And that's a tangible example of AI in action, improving your business systems and making it work for you.
Yeah. There are many other areas. Our marketing department uses AI extensively in the generation of content, in the generation of visuals. We use AI in video production. We use AI in many areas in the marketing side of our business.
So this is all the generative AI stuff then?
That's all the generative stuff. We use AI extensively in research.
Really?
So our favorite AI tool for research is something called Perplexity.
You know what? I recently stumbled upon that. I heard that the CEO of NVIDIA, Jensen, has been a big fan. What a game changer.
It's an absolutely incredible piece of AI, because you literally ask it a question. It will go and search the entire internet. It will provide you a set of answers with references and links as to where it found that data, so that you can click on those links to check that they come from reputable sources. So it doesn't just provide you with an answer, but it provides you with the bibliography of where it got that answer, and then you can really start working with it. So we use that extensively on the research side, and whenever we have anything that is difficult to figure out, you know, for instance, if a person is on a particular type of medication and we want to do a particular type of treatment that involves the patient being photosensitive because of other medication that they are taking, and therefore would not get a result with a particular kind of laser. And if you need to do that research to see whether there is a potential conflict, Perplexity will give you those answers in a matter of seconds.
And I love the way that it formats everything into a really tidy report.
Yeah, it's quite amazing. We're probably using about 6 or 7 different AI systems. The big one that at the moment we have still waited on, and that is diagnostics on patients. We like touching the skin. We like feeling the skin. We like seeing the skin. We like pressing the skin and understanding the skin visually as still your first point of reference.
And having an experienced human hand and human mind applying themselves to that diagnostic.
Absolutely. And you know, it's not only the symptom that you're looking at, you're also looking at the causes behind the symptom, and that requires questions about lifestyle, about diet, about all sorts of things, about sleep patterns, about stress levels. And the right questions need to be asked, and you can't feed all of that simply into a pre-programmed AI situation. The other thing is that in our industry, a lot of non-invasive cosmetic work is 2-degree artistic. A face is a blank canvas, and a doctor has a series of tools, as an artist does, which are different colors, different brushes, different things. And with all of that, they create something. Mm. They know what it's going to look like before they start, and they know what each tool can do. And they have the ability to visualize and imagine the outcome before they start the work. And they apply the brush to the canvas or the needle or the laser to the skin. That imagination, it's artistic, because you can paint in different styles. You could be impressionist, you could be all sorts of things. And that artistic side of our business, we don't believe that a robot will ever provide that individualism. It would tend to go to a cookie cutout solution.
Yeah.
Which people want to be individuals. They don't all want to look the same.
But as another tool or a set of tools for the artist, to have AI on your side and fueling your creativity, your artistry, and helping you get to the finish line as quickly and effectively as possible, Do you see AI going away anytime soon, or is it here to stay?
I think AI is here to stay. I think it will become cleverer and cleverer. The fear is that it becomes too clever. And, I do think that we've got to be very careful in how we use AI. I'm a great proponent of human intervention in the AI process. I think AI is a tool, which is an incredibly powerful tool if it is used wisely. Remember that ultimately AI does not know the difference between right and wrong and truth or a lie. It simply regenerates stuff that has already been generated. And there are many examples of questions that have been asked of ChatGPT where the answers that were given by ChatGPT are patently incorrect.
Oh, hallucinations.
Yeah. And they are just quite simply wrong.
Yeah.
But the AI is not there to give you advice. It is simply there to process billions and billions of opinions and regurgitate something which is dominant. Which it feels might be the answer you're looking for. So I think that one needs to always have that point of human intervention where we take what AI has generated and then we apply human thought and logic to it and double check on it.
There you go.
Don't use it to write the script for your next movie, but ask it to help you to create an outline for your next movie on which you will then start working. So I think as a tool, it's an incredibly powerful thing, and I think it's here to stay.
Well, from one early adopter giving you his take on where things are heading, you've been catching it here on the latest edition of Renewed Thinking, our thought leadership podcast in conversation with Victor Snyders, CEO of Skin Renewal. And I like that. I mean, I think if we had to roll some music over the credits, maybe Bruce Springsteen, that song Human Touch. You don't want to lose the human touch, no matter what you do.
You know, it's one of the things that I know we discussed this earlier. Worldwide, people are losing the ability to relate to other human beings. It's something we touched on one of our earlier podcasts.
Yeah.
With things that are being automated, with online shopping, with bots that talk to you. In Japan, many people under the age of 35 and 40 are not even contemplating marriage or physical relationships. They live alone in their apartments and they interact with the world through a screen and digitally, and they've lost the ability to connect. This goes back to child rearing. If you create your TV set or an iPad to be your child's babysitter, don't be surprised if your child doesn't know how to talk to people when they're 18 years old and they need to start dating. So we must encourage that human interaction, being able to read people, understand people, see people, empathize with people, understand laughter and tears and emotion, which is very unfortunately lost when it's left to emojis.
Well, I've really enjoyed having a face-to-face human interaction with you today, Victor, on this latest episode. I can't wait for our next discussion coming your way very soon on all good podcast platforms. And until next time, keep thinking.
Thanks, Mike.